Name? Ralston James. Passport number 45879. Dated 2nd of June, 1921. Address of residence, Efferna, Carrick and Shannon, County Leitrim. Born on the 19th of April, 1886, in Ireland. Deported, United States of America, August 1933.
Sometime around the 1930s, we heard great rumours of a man by the name of Gralton that had come from America to South Leitrim, to his native place there. He was expounding communism to a great extent and had a large following of young men and young women. He had built a hall there, and the people were in an awful way about it. In fact, he was despised by everybody, and no matter what would happen to him, I think at the time, even if he was shot, the people would feel relieved and, in fact, I think, thankful.
Gralton was a man that was respected by all the people in Mackenzie, a lot of the people. He had a few people that fell for this propaganda which was used against him, as that he was an antichrist and was against religion. And at that time, to be or to profess to be a member of the Communist Party was the same as saying you were an antichrist. And a lot of people were under the opinion that if Gralton, if he was killed, well, that they'd gain an indulgence and get to heaven.
Jim Gralton was born on a small farm at Efferna, County Leitrim, on the 19th of April, 1886. When he left school, he went to work as a shop assistant in a shop called McGann's in Carrick-on-Shannon. He soon tired of this and ran away to join the British Army. He deserted from the Army and went to the United States, where he joined the Navy. After spending some years in the Navy, he returned to civilian life and got a job in a factory in New York. It was at this stage he became involved in labour politics, helping Mick Quill to set up the Transport Workers' Union, protesting at the jailing of Larkin in Sing Sing on a charge of criminal anarchy, joining the James Conley Club of New York, and eventually becoming a member of the American Communist Party. He returned to Ireland to fight in the War for Independence, and it was during this period that he built a hall at Efferna Crossroads called the Pierce Conley Hall. In the stormy years that followed, the hall was used as a people's court, and Gralton himself led agitation for the division of big farms and bogland in Roscommon and Leitrim. Property and land were taken over, and Gralton, the political agitator, became known throughout the area. When the Civil War began, he ducked the Republican side and returned to the States after their defeat. In 1932, he returned from America. A brother who had worked the family farm had died. And on his return, he made contact and became a member of the Revolutionary Workers' Groups, the embryonic Communist Party of Ireland. His return to Drumsna was greeted with some unease and trepidation. Paddy Gralton.
In 1932, he came back from America, and a lot of us young people brought pressure on him to open the hall. So he said that we could open it if we wished, but that we would be getting into difficulties with the clergy. The hall was opened anyway, and there were fair crowds for some time. Then Father O'Dowd started that this Gralton was back again and that he was a communist agent, and for no one to go to the hall. Still the people kept going, not as much as in the beginning. Then he went round to all the houses of that had people, that whose people were going to the hall. And he brought pressure on them not to go near the hall. Father Cosgrove was preaching Sunday after Sunday, as well as Father O'Dowd in Gowell. Father O'Dowd in particular, about this communist in our midst. And he was a paid agent. And for the people going to the hall, that if they didn't cease going, that if there was work or anything going on, that they mightn't be coming to him. And he brought great pressure, terrible pressure on the people of the locality. And if there any people from the outside came in, he got off of the priests in that locality to preach the following Sunday, which happened up in Islin. And the same happened down in Kilturbert with a Father McGavern, where people from that parish came to the hall, and this other Father McGavern was out the following Sunday and telling what would happen to the people. He would put horns on them and this and that, and that he put horns on Gralton. So Gralton said that he heard that Father McGavern had put horns on him, and he mentioned at a meeting that he'd be very glad that he put horns on him, that he'd make a far easier livelihood, that he'd go into a circus.
"Having regard," he said, "to what our bishop stated on this matter at the last visitation, and what the people heard from the Lenten pastorals and from our Holy Father the Pope, it should not be necessary to tell that communism is the enemy of all religion and subversive of ordered government." They had evidence, however, that certain people still required enlightenment, and the fact stated in the leaflet would go a long way to dispel any ignorance that existed about the ultimate objects and anti-Christian methods of this diabolical system. They were told to avoid it as they would the Black Plague, and to flee from the professed communists as they would from a poisonous serpent. If, in the physical order, the authorities found it necessary to ostracize an individual whose presence was dangerous to the health of the community, there might be sympathy for the unfortunate individual as for the lepers of old. But everybody would admit that the public safety...
He became involved in the unemployed movement in the 30s, and he attended a meeting in Longford, and I believe there were over 1,000 people marched that day, and he addressed that meeting, himself and a gentleman by the name of Dan Lade, who was chairman of the unemployed workers' movement at the time. And he also helped to reinstate a man down in Roscommon who was evicted from his holding. And he addressed the meeting that day, and there was pressure brought on him by the Republicans who were there to address the meeting. He didn't want to do it, but they insisted because he was the only one that was any good speaking at the time. He was agitating a lot for get roads done and rivers, and he joined the Fianna Fáil Club here in Imsna. He used to bring up a lot of projects such as getting roads done and rivers, and he agitated strong, and he had the support of the club in those demands. And next the word came from headquarters of the Fianna Fáil party that he be expelled from the club. So there was a gentleman here who was the chairman of the club at the time by the name of Burden. I don't know his Christian name. And he was very great with Jim, and he advised him to get out of the club quietly, that he didn't want the nasty job of expelling him. So he ceased attending the meetings.
Now, it's quite obvious that his activities in the hall, classes in political indoctrination and so on, were very important in the final leading up to his deportation.
Well, as far as I can remember, there was never any classes of indoctrination. The only indoctrination was that he was getting the people to stand on their own feet, 2 feet, and demand a decent livelihood for themselves and their families. And he was a great man for the youth, because when the hall was open, first he had music lessons, he had dancing lessons, Irish classes and English classes.
No, my parents wouldn't let me go to it because they thought that I'd turn over and be a communist or turn over my religion too, which was naturally, I would never turn over anyway, but I still wasn't let go.
Communist plan to stir up agrarian strife. Recruits to Red Army. Plot to promote cattle drives and raids on big farms. Secret Congress at Trim. A Red Army established in Ireland. Communists' next move to wreck society.
Well, this evening, Father O'Dowd came here. He was after being told that we were going to fire into the hall that night, and told me not to fire into it. So I went and met my company and I told them that what I was after hearing. And they said that it didn't make any difference what the priest did, that they were going to fire into it anyway. So it went on, and they did fire into the hall.
Pierce Connolly Hall at Gowl, County Leitrim, has been gutted by incendiaries, who first soaked the hall with paraffin. Thus the working people of the area have lost the only hall they had for social and meeting purposes. This piece of blackguardism was carried out on Christmas Eve and followed several other attempts to destroy the hall. A few days earlier, a landmine was placed under it but failed to do much damage. Some weeks previously, a volley of revolver shots was fired at the hall while a dance was in progress.
He also helped to reinstate a man down on Roscommon. I think it was the early Kingston's estate, and the man in the gatehouse was evicted. So a lot of Republicans went down, and a few was asked Grattan to come with us, so he came. And he was asked to address the meeting, which he did. And at that meeting, it was funny the way that even the few things that he did say were misinterpreted. I remember him saying that this present crisis is not a national crisis. It is a crisis of the whole international capitalist system. And coming home, some of them lads were said laughingly, "Well, Christ, I thought it's what he said. There's another Christ here, or there's several Christ." What he said was, "This is not a national crisis. It is an international crisis of the whole capitalist system." So the people just misinterpreted it, what he said.
Carrick on Shannon, Monday. On the motion of its chairman, Mr. Henry McMurrow, seconded by Mr. Michael McGrath, Leitrim County Board of Health passed the following resolution at a special meeting. "We observe with great concern the spread of a godless campaign within this county under the guise of communism, and as public representatives, we emphatically and publicly condemn such teaching in our midst. As representatives of a Christian community, we call upon the government to take a firm stand to eradicate this evil propaganda from among us, and we assure the government of our active support in any action they may take to uphold the warnings of the Catholic hierarchy against the spread of this evil." Mr. McMurrow said that if it were necessary, he would take a sword and rouse the clans of Breffni and do a man's part to put an end to this devil's work.
And then Father O'Dowd mentioned Sunday after Sunday that if Grattan was to remain in the area, that he wouldn't be in it, that either him or Grattan would have to go. So he rose up very bitter feelings against him. And he mentioned there's 14 communists in the area. And
were there 14 communists in the area at the time?
Not at all. Those were people who stuck up by Grattan. They were mostly all neighbours. And a lot of them should get credit because they had an awful lot to lose at the time. My father had a small shop, and some of those people who came to the shop, some of them left after the meeting in Umsnaa for the very reason that I introduced O'Donnell. They thought that I shouldn't have gone against the clergy.
How was the deportation of Grattan brought about?
Well, the clergy of this parish and the parish of Kilturbert and Kiltohart and Annaduff were all opposed to Grattan. And then the Bishop of Ardan and Clanmacnoise, I'd say that through him he brought pressure on the Minister for Justice, who was Mr. Gahagan, who was TD and Minister for Justice for Longford at that time. That is not my opinion, but it's the opinion of the majority of the people in this locality.
My name is Joseph Mooney of Drumshanbo, a member of Leitrim County Council. My father, the late Andrew Mooney, was also a member of the Leitrim County Council and a member of the Leitrim Board of Health. My recollection regarding the Grattan affair is rather hazy, as I was young at the time, except what I may have gleaned from newspaper cuttings. But as far as I can recollect, my father did sponsor a notice of motion in the 30s calling on the government, the then government, to deport James Gralton on the basis that he was engaged in communist activities and was promoting communism in the area, or in his native area. That stand at the time by my father was supported in an editorial in a weekly paper, and it was suggested in that editorial that similar stands should be made by the other public bodies in the country. There was a rumour at that time that a World Congress of Communism was to be held in Galway, and it was with the object of preventing such a congress being held that my father took the stand at that time.
Jim Gralton was a naturalised American citizen. On February 3rd, 1933, a deportation order was issued. As an undesirable alien, he was ordered to leave the country before March the 4th. A local defence committee was formed opposing deportation and demanding a trial. Gralton went to see Padraig O'Donnell.
A man arrived on my doorstep one day and said he was Jim Gralton and he was being deported from Leitrim, and he wanted to know what I would do about it. I had read in the papers that a man of the deportation. I thought it was a shame that a man born in Ireland should be deported. But when Gralton arrived on the doorstep, I, being a countryman, I decided that I'd like to know whether he was backed by his neighbours or not. Because a man could be all right and have the neighbours against him, but he couldn't be all wrong and have the neighbours with him. And I said I'd go up on the Saturday night evening, gather the neighbours and then gather the neighbours into his kitchen, and I'd meet them. And I arrived there to a packed house. So I realised that he had a good standing with the neighbours, and that was all the proof I wanted of what side they should take. And I went to Mass that Sunday, next day, and went to Mass Drumsna, and the priest preached a rather violent sermon, which was aimed at me, really, because the notice of the meeting was posted up. And at the meeting itself, I don't know what the crowd had been like, but the priest was very hostile, and he ordered the people to attack me, which they did with considerable enthusiasm. And I got hammered out of the place. My attitude was that if a man born in Ireland had done something that was wrong, well, there was law to deal with him. And if there wasn't law, well, pass laws. But to deport a man born in Ireland for some reason was ridiculous.
There was a meeting at Gralton's house the night before, and it was decided that a gentleman would introduce the speakers. This gentleman was also an American citizen, and he volunteered to introduce the speakers after Mass. So we went to Drumsna Mass that day, but as we arrived at the church, Mass was already going on, as the priest had it earlier than usual. And Father Cosgrove was outside the church himself, and he got another priest to say Mass. So we entered the church anyway, we're only in a few minutes, when Father Cosgrove went in on the sacristy door and came out on the altar, and said that five or six anti-God men were after arriving, and for the people to clear away and not to listen to them, that they were agents of Antichrist. So when Mass was over then, we went over to a tree, and Father Cosgrove was out very fast to our heels, and he came over to this gentleman that was to address the meeting, and he says, "If you open your mouth, you'll be the next for Waterloo." So this man got cold feet and he wouldn't address the meeting. So O'Donnell says, "What will we do now?" So I said, "Well, I'll introduce him." So I introduced Mr. O'Donnell, and the next thing Father Cosgrove came on and waved his arm and says, take them down. So the missiles started flying from all directions, and there was one old lady in particular, Sarah Gulravy, and she was used to do a bit of work for this gentleman, and she had her apron or a dirt full of mud balls, and she started throwing them, and a few others took up the throwing as well. And O'Donnell and I were all clobbered, so we had to abandon the meeting. I was in a very advantageous position at the time. I was on the street, and there wasn't that many people who started throwing the mud. All the good, decent people, they kept looking on, and some of them went home. But there was only a few people that done the throwing. And when we got down after three, some of those gentlemen went to attack us. And Donald O'Reilly struck one of them and took him to the ground. So they kept back after that. Then we had to retreat down to the village. And another gentleman said that we should be thrown into the Shannon. So we went. We had to go home then, and all those men had tea in my father's house. And the guards came out to see they don't want any protection. We were to hold a meeting in Gowell after Mass as well. So O'Donnell says, you give us damn poor protection in them snare. So I don't see what's the use of ye coming to protect us here. So we abandoned the meeting in Gowell, because some of those blackguards that done the throwing, and wouldn't call them blackguards, they were just misled by the clergy. They came on to Gowell as well to have another go at us if we did hold the meeting after Mass. But we had a meeting at Effrona Crossroads that evening, and the majority of the neighbours turned out to hear the speakers.
The meeting at Drumsnare was held on Sunday, March 5th, one day after the expiry date of the deportation order. Gralton, his supporters in Dublin, and some of the neighbours decided to resist deportation without trial. On March 3rd, Gralton went underground.
Gralton went on the run, and the neighbours all gathered and helped put in the crop and do the jobs for him. He went. He was on the run. He left a few days prior to the 4th of March, or the day before it, and he went on the run. He was in Dublin for a few weeks, and he came back, to his own house. Then he went to neighbours' houses, and he kept in the locality, in the immediate locality, for a long time. A deputation went to the Leitrim County Council, including his mother, demanding that he get a trial. And it got great publicity, as there was a deputation from the road workers there the same day looking for an increase in wages. And I happened to act as spokesman for the road workers that day. And when Gralton's case was brought up, of course, there was a great uproar and shouting and a support for Gralton, and a great publicity on the papers. In a few days after, there was 14 houses raided in the locality. And Gralton was in one of them, but he made his escape, thanks to a gentleman whose house was also raided. And he knew Gralton was in his uncle's house, and he went in his shirt and trousers and bare feet to the uncle's house, which was convenient to his own, and told Gralton that the guards were searching. And Gralton got away, and when the guards arrived, he was gone.
With the slogan, "Jim Gralton shall not leave Ireland," a strong Gralton Defence Committee has been established in Dublin to resist the deportation order served on Jim Gralton, a Leitrim working farmer, by the Fianna Fáil government. The meeting elected Patrick Flanagan, N.U.R., as chairman. Prominent members of the Irish Academy and other writers, including Frank O'Connor, F.R. Higgins, Pather O'Donnell, Dennis Johnson, Francis Stewart, Lyle Donaghy, and Don Piat, have joined the committee, of which Lyle Donaghy and Donal O'Reilly are joint secretaries.
Why, in a county like Leitrim, where there was a large Republican following, did they allow the deportation of Gralton?
Well, you say a large Republican following in Leitrim. I would say that the Republican movement in Leitrim, which was numerically strong, was a movement that had no political philosophy whatsoever. and that the vast majority of the men in Leitrim, I suppose the same as in every other place, who joined the Republican Army and the Republican movement, joined solely for one aim, for to liberate Ireland from the visible signs of Britain, namely the British Army. And after they were out, that was as much as we could see. Now, I would say that in Leitrim, perhaps there would be the most neighbourly people that you would get in any part of Ireland. And if there was anything wrong with Jim Gralton, other than what he was branded as, there would be very few who would not come to his aid. But the whole question of communism at that time, from 1932 onwards, was continually talked of on the pulpits and the press and various other ways of the mass media on the whole question of communism. And communism was not talked of to the people as something that was going to help small farmers or break up ranches or give decent wages or jobs to the people. It was something that was going to destroy, something that was very dear to the people. And to the people of Leitrim, the same as every place, that it was going to destroy the religion, that it was going to deny God, and all that sort of thing. And therefore, the people who didn't understand had got to make up their minds of where their loyalties were. Were they going to be loyal to the clergy that were the people who led them spiritually? Or were they going to be loyal to somebody that the clergy and bishops condemned, who had some philosophy that the people couldn't understand or never knew anything about? So therefore, I would say that the people didn't rally, for the simple reason is that they didn't understand. And they accepted the leadership of the people that they had loyalty to, which was the bishops, aided and abetted perhaps by politicians who they never saw.
Could you describe the final meeting you had with Gralton?
Well, I remember the deportation order that was issued against Jimmy Gralton. And in the agitation which followed for a trial, no deportation, but it was a trial, I didn't take any part. I was a member of the Republican Movement, a volunteer in the IRA, and the IRA took no line on the whole question of deportation. But I had known Gralton and known some of his friends, and I remember while he was on the run, he sent for me once for to meet him. But I did meet with him and talk with him for about an hour. He explained the whole position to me very clearly. The whole question of he was a socialist and why he was a socialist. And the system of capitalism and the system of landlordism and all the things like that, which he explained to me in an hour while he was a wanted man, while he was on the run. And in the course of that hour, I would say that it had a big effect, what he said to me, on the changing of my mind and making me begin to think in terms on the rights of wrongs of the system and the rights of wrongs of the whole question of the deportation of this man. And from that time on, I made up my mind that I was intended for to take part in the anti-deportation agitation and come in on the side which I was neutral prior to that. And I did intend for to fix him up, or to get through influence that I had, to fix him up in the sort of things that a man on the run needs, billets, all the things connected with a man, to save him from being caught by the police.
At about 12:30 on Saturday, Jim Gralton was captured in the house of a small farmer by the name of Frank Burn of Brandrum, between Mohill and Ballinamore. He was in bed at the time that the police and CID entered his house.
There were ramblers in the house, and as they were about to go home, two police and a CID man rushed in and shouted, "Hands up!" They then went for the room Jim was in, and the CID man took the lamp off the wall as they said they needed a light to search. The CID man and the boy had a scuffle in which the globe of the lamp was broken. They then rushed up into the room and captured Jim. When they took him down to the kitchen, Jim shook hands with them all, and going out the door he said, "So long, boys. I'll return to Ireland when we have a workers' republic." He was brought to Ballinamore Barracks, and on Saturday he was brought to Cork. He passed through Carrick and Shannon. Several of Gralton's old neighbours called at Carrick Barracks to see if he was there, to bid him farewell, but all missed him, as the guard said he would not pass that way. But he did pass through Carrick, and as he was delayed at the barrack for about 5 minutes, several people were out for cameras, and they snapped him as he entered the barracks.
Jim Gralton was arrested on Saturday, August 12th, 1933, and deported from Cove on the following day to the United States. The fare was paid from money found in his possession. There is a difference of opinion as to how successful an activist Gralton was. Padraig O'Donnell.
Gralton had a habit of urging his mission, or self-adopted mission. I don't suppose he had any charge of any mission in relation to time in Ireland, but he chose to look on himself as a kind of a missioner, and he talked to the people to lead them the way he might have talked to a crowd, or a pretty politically minded urban crowd. And even then he would have been called to order for a lot of nonsense he talked, things that had nothing to do with agitation of workers. See, anti-clericalism is made the central theme for a man's agitation. It's a middle class form of agitation. Workers may cease going to mass or cease going to church, but they don't set themselves out to attack clerics. They forget about them. And he was a particularly bad subject in that way. And after all, a sensitive question in rural Ireland is the question of an attack on the priest, and especially when it's done in a context that where he's doing nothing except just his ordinary duties. If it was in the midst of an agitation, the priest was taking a different side from the popular movement, then you would attack him as an opponent, but not necessarily as a priest. He was a bit of a damn fool, really. I don't call it advanced when a man talks in terms that far exceed any possibility of response from the people that he's addressing. I think that's just a piece of play acting. And I think he was a bad subject in that way, that he talked a lot of irrelevancies. And the only thing that interested me was that I thought the deportation was wrong. And I backed him on that level. But on the question of the kind of way in which he advocated change, I don't think he had any sense of any political sense in the world.
You're in fact saying that he wasn't a political thinker.
Oh, he wasn't, but I don't think he was a thinker at all. He was a man that had life had given him a lot of kicks, probably, and he adopted communism as his form of response to his experiences, but he didn't know how to preach it or teach it. And I think he was a very, very bad advocate of the cause that he espoused. But I don't think he had any philosophic understanding of communism.
My name is Paddy Early, and I come from close to the home of Jim Gralton. We were coming from a parade of the IRA, which we were drilling and parading and doing it fairly openly at the time. And I remember half a dozen of us coming back the road on bicycles, and he came into the crowd where we were, and he was talking politics as far as he could and trying to explain to us young fellas. And He said, I suppose you fellas are all very happy now that Cosgrave is out and De Valera's in. The jail gates are opened. There's no more police brutality. Everything is hunky-dory. But he explained that there would be no difference that the men who were released from jail, if they continued with the Republican programme and policies, would be put back again because the Fianna Fáil or De Valera government would not change the system. They might try to make it a bit work slightly different, but as soon as it was touched by any peoples or any organisations that differed from the regime, that the machine would be put into practice again the very same as the old one, and that the men would have to go back to jail, the same repressive measures would be used against men who were agitating one way or another for republicanism, for land agitation, trade union strikes, increases in wages or anything else. At that time, of course, we listened. But we didn't give it a terrible lot of heed to what he said because we didn't understand. And it's only when you experience a thing that your mind goes back to that particular Sunday when Jim Gralton, a man with experience in America working in an industrial environment, and also with a political experience, you can realise now how correct his statements were.
It is easy but unfair to blame either the people or the politicians of Leitrim. They were simply reflecting the national feeling at the time. The Eucharistic Congress had taken place the previous year in 1932, and religious feeling was high. It was only 16 years after the Russian Revolution. There was an economic crisis in the Western world, and Europe was dividing into two camps, the left and the right. In Ireland, there were running battles between Republicans and the newly formed Army Comrades Association. The prelates, newspapers and politicians warned of a communist takeover. How real was this threat? Historian Donald McCartney.
Well, I don't think it was very real in Ireland in the circumstances at all, except that people could point to the fact that there was a collapse in the economy generally in 1929 and into the early 1930s. And then people looked to what might happen. The situation simply was that Mr. De Valera was around. It was known that he had then the support of the IRA. The IRA had a wing to it which was very left-wing. The people who, under Padraig O'Donnell and Gilmore and others, would become Saoire Éire in 1931. And De Valera did look to the IRA for support at that time. There was always what one might call a socialist wing to the IRA, going back into the early days of Sinn Féin, a left wing which concentrated on agrarianism, particularly in the western counties. You had it in Sligo, in Mayo, Roscommon, Leitrim, Donegal. People who felt that they hadn't succeeded, as it were, under the Land Acts. These were the poorer farmers. The Cosgrave administration had concentrated a great deal on the fairly strong farmer. Now, this meant, of course, that small farmers and farm labourers were in a very bad way, and these people were using a certain amount of revolutionary talk in the late 1920s, early 1930s, and they had the support of Mr. De Valera. In fact, Mr. De Valera came to power with the help of those people, using their argument on the land annuities and so on. Now, it was suspected by right-wing groups at the time in Ireland, by supporters of the Cosgrave administration, that Mr. De Valera would be a socialist. One was only to read Dennis Gwynne's 1933 biography of De Valera to see him describe Mr. De Valera as a socialist, backed by the alliance of left-wing Labour, and possibly going to emerge, Ireland going to emerge as some kind of socialist republic. It's a bit laughable looking back on from our vantage point, but the threat was very much there at the time.
James Gralton never returned to Ireland. He died in New York on the 29th of December,